Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality, and is about discovering your place in this great universe, from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life, and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we have a special for the winter season, and it is called The Winter Sisters by Tim Westover. And it's a novel about times gone past, not specifically about the winter season. However, it truly is a great novel to sit down, curl up when you have a vacation day, or to say, I'm just going to sit down and enjoy a really wonderful story. It's almost, when I picked up this book, it was almost as if you felt it, I mean, right from the get-go, as if you're in a movie. You've stepped into that time and place. You kind of get so immersed in each and every word that's so descriptive. You're saying, I truly can see this and feel this with all of my senses. And isn't that the quality of a great novel? I'll tell you, when I read this book, it was like I just had to keep reading it. It probably took me twice as long because I felt like I was in the space and I truly did not know where it was going. But every page, it was a wonderful journey. Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jeanette, and thank you for your kind words. That really a great start for me. I've got a big smile on my face.
Well, Tim, you know, as soon as I opened up the book, it was like, oh, this is my kind of book, you know, because, you know, I think, you know, I'm a naturopathic physician. I've been written up in the paper that I'm a voodoo priestess and a shaman. So many times I've laid my hand on people and others would say, don't you dare take away their pain. And I said, whoa, I'm all over these pages. Isn't that wonderful? You know, and don't you think sometimes when you have a really good story, it's almost as if it draws you in because it draws so much from your inside of who you are and it correlates with some identities that you might want to just like almost wear as drag for the day, yes? I mean, like you want to put on a costume, you know, you want to go out and dance with it, yes?
Well, anytime that you can, that the writing and the characters let you inhabit them and you can you can feel yourself seeing it, whether it's through the eyes of a character or whether you're standing off to the side and seeing the action happen. Those are always my favorite kind of books. And I hope that that was something I was able to show here as well.
You know, I loved it on the first page. It's the prologue, actually, and it says, starts right out with 1811. And the words were, they were slick with moss and lichens. Do you know that I have lichens like everywhere around me? I mean, it's my big thing.
I have them on my desk too.
You know, I live in New Orleans. I go outside for a walk, and I'm always coming back in with a stick that's got something on it, or the little bits and pieces of lichen would fall at my front door, and I always seem to collect them. Don't you think the mysteries of nature that's all around us is what really draws us into a world that sometimes so many people don't even notice?
Especially for something like moss or lichen, because those are things that people, they either say it's dirty or they just step over it and don't even think about it. But my phone is half pictures of my daughter and half pictures of interesting mosses and mushrooms that I see when I'm out walking. Yeah. And my daughter will say, Daddy, what are you doing? This is just neat moss. Look at that. It's like really green and it's kind of spongy. And okay, well, Daddy, you love moss, and that's great. That's good for you.
Yeah. Don't you think it's really cool, though, when we can see that? And once we've almost, like, walked that path, when we start to read a story, we're saying it, like, it dings these little lights in our brain, and we're saying, ooh, I can feel it. I can smell it. In other words, your story, again, your book, The Winter Sisters, it truly is for someone who is an herbalist, a natural doctor, someone who has delved into nature, someone who loves to touch and feel and sense things, don't you think?
Yeah, and one of the main characters is an herbalist as well, a folk healer with a specialty in herbs and tonics and potions and folk remedies that were part of the Southern Appalachian culture in the time period of the novel before that and continue to be today. And I did a lot of research into authentic practices and tried to incorporate those in the book as well.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's so much detail in your book. I mean, right down to even the words were, right in the beginning, I had underlined something, and it said, something was hidden in a linen shroud. And, you know, we think of words that they bring to picture very much a description, and you're saying, what was that about? Was it in olden days, as your book is set in the 1800s? And we talk about it, and we say, what is that about today? You know, if we really look at it, Tim, there's a great revolution now going on, especially on a lot of social media, that a lot of the witches and a lot of the root workers are starting to come forward and say, hey, I'm out here. It's not about what you think, and it's truly about how can we work with the earth around us. There's a lot of herbalists who are saying, oh, no, you have to do it my way. And then we see the medical community, it's ready to implode upon itself unless it comes up with this monumental cure that's going to turn us into robots, and hey, they're already down that thing because they're doing stem cells. So don't you think that, in essence, that's a real collection of what your book is about? It's how all of these types of healing, of which part of our being are we trying to heal, yes?
I think that you've hit on the central theme that I was going for, which is that holistic approach to healing, to curing. So our main character is trained in the 19th century scientific medicine, which we look back on now and say, wow, they had it so completely wrong.
Right.
Because they're talking about the four humors, about bleeding, about purging and scarification and heroic medicine where you have to suffer in order to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And modern scientific medicine looks back on that and just says our model is now something completely different. So I think that there's a tremendous value in a holistic approach to medicine. And in the book, we see it in the context of the 19th century, but it's meant to be something to think about here in the 21st century as well. And our doctor's journey through the book is a journey of having his perspective broadened. He comes in thinking the only way to cure a person is by bleeding them, by the lancet or by leeches or by balancing their humors. And he realizes that there are many more ways, whether it's one sister's herbs and root work or another sister's rituals and performances and acts that lead a person to cure themselves, whether it's through some action of the body or some change of mental perspective. And then there's one sister whose cures just seem completely unknowable, unsolvable. And it's his quest for trying to find out what makes her work. How does she do what she does that drives him and ultimately leads him to question, can he, if it works, isn't that all that matters? Does he have to know? Does he have to,
right.
Does he have to have the answer in order to believe in it and see the effects of it? Or can he just accept that some things in this world are greater than our knowledge or our philosophies or where we may be as a culture and a society right now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that in 100 years, we will look back on the early 21st century and say, I can't believe that they ever let people eat bananas, or didn't they know that bananas were the cause of all cancer? And we, you know, we know that now, and how could they not have known that?
Right. You know, I think it's so interesting because if you truly look at it, the three sisters are really the healing of the body, mind, and soul. Each one has a specific part, and that's what they're working with. And if you look at healing of body, mind, and soul, is not that the essence of sometimes healing? But, you know, we always think of the word healing as perfection or cure. And I think where the regular, you know, as traditional, as we would call physician, where he studies the books and he knows everything because it's claimed as dogma. In other words, thy who knows more is always the one who is the stakeholder. Sometimes they get truly stuck in that paradigm and they aren't able to escape it. So don't you think sometimes it's really, what are we talking about? They really want to say, but we are doing the healing because we can cure you. And in essence, what is a cure? What is healing? And don't you think your sisters are truly the body, mind, and soul?
I love that particular way of looking at them as body, mind, and soul. And I feel like the best sorts of healing, restitution of the whole person, comes from not just curing what may be ailing with the body, but attending to what is happening with the mind and what is happening with the soul. And that all three of those elements can affect the others. If something is amiss with the body, then that is going to hurt the mind and the soul. If something is amiss with the body, then helping to put the mind and soul at ease can certainly affect what is happening in the body. We see they call it the placebo effect, where if a patient believes that the cure is working, even if there's nothing in the medicine, that has a profound and powerful effect on the body's own healing mechanisms, that belief is intrinsic to our body's inbuilt defenses.
You know, it's interesting when you say that, because when we look back on it, we truly say, what is the concept of quantum science right now? It truly is that your perception is what is. That is your, quote, truth. So if your perception is your incantation or your mantra or your meditation, are you not in essence truly in control of your own illness, sickness, death, life, or whatever you need for yourself? Scary thing
to
think of.
That. Yeah. I mean, I would like to think that it's all in our own hands, but I don't think it is. I think that we're acted on by other forces, by other people, other natural processes. It doesn't come just entirely down to perception or willing something into existence. I think that we have a physical reality. There are germs that attack us, and antibiotics can be the best cure for that. So I don't want to denigrate modern medicine in any way, because I think that practitioners of modern medicine are wonderful people who are using the best of their powers and their knowledge to try and help people.
Right. Don't you think, just as in your story, though, Tim, when all of the practitioners all come together, when you have the priest, you have your doctor, and you have the Winter Sisters, and they all try to come into town to help people as a joint effort, is not that truly what we would love to see in the years now, 2019? We would say, wouldn't it be great if everybody just worked together instead of kind of separating everybody off and causing so much friction within the system?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. Yes. Yeah. That a comprehensive approach that doesn't ignore any part of the body, the mind, and the soul, and everything that science and tradition and new exploration has taught us, ignoring any part of that, or just saying, we're only going to do what's in this book, or we're only going to do what my grandmother taught me.
Right.
That doesn't lead us forward. That's not a positive mindset or a scientific mindset. The best mindset is to be open to all possibilities and to accept evidence from wherever it comes, whether it's the microbiology lab or whether it's a root doctor's work, this has an effect. This is happening. This is helping people. How can we better understand this? And how can we use all parts of the human experience to improve all of our lives?
You know, it's so important because you share in your book with your main characters, you know, how they brought together physician and healers. And it truly, I think, they marveled at each other's skills. They marveled at each other's books. They noticed what crossed over. It was very similar. They also noticed what was dissimilar, but yet they were inquisitive enough to be able to learn more. Isn't that truly the time where we say, can we maybe stop wagging the finger and see how it plays out? Because when your characters in the book, when patients would come to them, they would say, they would both observe. And then whoever thought that was first, do no harm, would go first. And then the next, and then the next. In other words, take the area of least resistance and going, instead of going in and just totally saying, oh no, this is the way it is, and stick with that. Don't you think we could be a little more fluid with our thought process on this too?
I certainly think we could. Yeah, to try what is least painful with the hope that we can heal with minimal effort and minimal impact, but without forgetting that sometimes we are going to have to take a harder road. If it's aggressive cancer, then it's going to be chemotherapy or surgery. That's just not something that may be within an herbalist's or a root doctor's ability to cure or to treat. If you have tuberculosis, you're going to need to see a microbiologist. But to help with to help heal not just the body, but the mind and the soul, there's tremendous value in all kinds of holistic approaches and combined approaches. My personal background is in modern scientific medicine. So I work with clinical laboratories who are running very specific scientific genetic tests on blood, on other body fluids, getting genetic markers, running chemical panels and blood cell counts. And I have 7 microscopes at my house, different kinds of stains to look at different kinds of specimens. So I absolutely feel the value of modern scientific medicine, but I know that it could be improved and broadened by working with other kinds of holistic healing and vice versa, that holistic healing could also be improved and broadened by crossing that divide. I know that there's a lot of friction on both sides of that because different practitioners of different, it's such a shame that there's a gulf between those when really everyone has the same goal of helping people to get better in every aspect of their being and their body and their mind and their soul. But it's
so
not within every, yeah.
Sorry, it's so interesting that you talked about your experience and your work, Tim, because truly where you and I are is your feeling and your knowing is coming from that end. However, you're extending outward. Really, mine is as a naturopathic physician. We are pretty much primary care physicians. However, we work so much with natural substances. I think that's really about how can you marry them all. And, you know, we all the time work with physicians. So I think there is now a time where people are starting to open up to this information. They're starting to understand it. They are dabbling it. We see a lot of herbal concoctions on the internet these days, you know. It's just as you share in your book about the sassafras and a lot of the eucalyptus, the slippery elm, and the corn silk. So many of these are, you can Google it at any time and say, I think I'll try it. You can make your own tincture. You can turn around and purchase something from a physician. You could purchase it from a company. But in other words, people are starting to learn to dabble in the medicines of the earth. And I think we say, is that going to cure you or heal you? Maybe it's just about the dance. Maybe it's just about the process of engaging in the earth and these medicines that it used to have. What is the harm in that?
I don't think there's any harm in that. And all of our medicines come from the earth, whether it's slippery elm tea or whether it's aspirin, which is willow bark, or whether it's preparation H, which is witch hazel, or whether it's treatments for malaria that come from quinine from the cinchona tree. So what we're doing in the lab is exploring what's coming from the earth and the materials that it provides, and how can we refine those, improve those, realize what's good and what's bad, what's good and what's less helpful within any kind of treatment or cure. I do think that there's elements of scientific research, though, because of that taint of money, that are more complicated.
Right.
Like research into St. John's wort and its ability to cure depression is never going to get the money that a new pharmaceutical concoction that can be patented and licensed and controlled. And so where's the money going to come from to study St. John's wort when there's a company that wants instead to develop their own patented formula? Maybe it's based on St. John's wort, but they've tweaked certain genetic elements to make it 2% better and 10,000 times more expensive.
You know, I think the substances we see in the earth, and we're talking about getting into nature, cure your meditation. I mean, cure your depression or anxiety. You just need to go outside and, you know, do meditation out in the sun. And we think about, you know, that whole prospect a few years ago was out. It was go hug a tree. You know, you don't feel good, go hug a tree, you know.
Forest
go
bathing.
Yeah. And I think it was so interesting because you had a line in your book and it says, she let the mud fall back to the earth, but her hands were stained with the ashes of animals, vegetables, and mortals. And I thought that was such a profound statement, because it's truly about life and death in the cycle. Are we looking to the dance of curing so we can delay death? Or are we looking to create health and life and engage with it? And I truly think your book is an absolutely wonderful novel, The Winter Sisters in the 1800s. It's truly about being able to share how you dance with the world around you through nature. And it's such an engaging, beautiful symphony when you're able to be there, don't you think?
I definitely agree with that. I'm very much a person that finds tranquility in the natural world. I go outside and take a walk when I'm feeling anxious or depressed, but I also take antidepressants and anti-anxiety medicine. And I feel like both of those things can work together.
Right.
There's just such a powerful opportunity for collaboration and mutual learning that would come from a mutual respect. And I agree with what you said, that we're seeing a turning point, 2019, that perhaps wasn't there in 1997 or 2004.
Right.
People are taking a more holistic approach, that there's physicians such as yourself who work in a much more holistic way. And Blue Cross Blue Shield, when they send me emails about my health plan, say, why don't you try meditation? Why don't you try regular exercise? Why don't you try lighting some candles and relaxing? I'm not sure they're quite ready to say, why don't you try some yellow root tea or some gross tasteless chill tonic?
Right.
But maybe they will be in 15 years.
Right. Well, you know what's interesting is also, too, you talked about the baby. He got his onion poultice on his chest. I can distinctly remember, I'm in my 60s now, and my brother had croup in the 1950s, and I distinctly remember using a poultice plaster for his chest, you know, and it was very, very clear in my mind. So I think, have we maybe jumped the track and kind of got lost, and we're just trying to get back on track again, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, that I think the book is a great story for elders, too. Do you know that? Because I really, truly believe if anyone is over the age of 50, your book, The Winter Sisters, it would be a great holiday gift, because they would say, yeah, we used to do that. Oh, I do that all the time. Or they might find themselves, you know, on the pages,
yeah,
right?
Right. When I was a kid, I remember taking that. And I get comments like that. That people will email me or share with me on social media. They'll say, I remember that medicine. I remember the Elixir Salutis. I remember Grove's Tasteless Chill Tonic. I remember Indian Kickapoo Sagwa. My mom used to give that to me all the time. And my grandmother was never without her bottle of that.
I think that's really cool, though, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
You know, you also had a sentence in the book, a person's just a person unless everybody else thinks otherwise. And I wrote on the top, power of perception. Isn't that what we spoke about just a few minutes ago, is that truly, unless we attach a name, are we not all trying to do the same thing? We're trying to comfort someone, alleviate their pain and suffering, help systems of their body work better, and helping to calm and ease their thoughts. Isn't that truly what we're doing, but we seem to put labels on it?
Yes, you're absolutely right. By labeling certain people or segmenting them, we're not giving them power. We're taking power away from them by saying, we're going to label you as an herbalist. So don't you dare touch something that's not an herb. We're going to label you as a physician. So don't you dare touch anything that didn't come out of Kahneman's Atlas of Clinical Microbiology.
You know, there's so many materia medicas around, and there's, you know, put any kind of label you want, shuffle the pages, and people get totally confused. And they'll still sit down and read it because they'll say, oh, this sounds along my lines, and not even know that it might be have intermeshed or interwoven with other professions. You know, it's so interesting. I thought this was like the key of your book. And it says, but you almost chose to risk that old age for a secret. And I circle the word a secret. Is not what we're trying to do is trying to keep ourselves and find out the mysteries of life before we, quote, die. But also you say, everyone wants to go to heaven, but no one wants to die. So are we trying to just engage in everything that's around us and find out its mystery? In other words, we wouldn't want to find out the answers to the secrets or the mysteries when we were maybe in our 20s and 30s. What would we do for the rest of our life then, you know?
Right.
It's almost as if the secret mysteries of life is the dance of a lifetime. Yes?
I like the way that you put that, that there's so much to learn in this time on Earth, whether it's the moss and lichens that sometimes we don't slow down and see, or whether it's the mysteries of love and charity and healing. Sometimes it doesn't seem like there's enough time to do it all. But like you said, it's probably good that there's not enough time to do it all, because otherwise we would end up with, well, I'm 37 years old and I've pretty much done here.
I think the most profound sentence, Tim, in closing that we could talk about is the last sentence of your book. It says, O physician, do not leave us so unsatisfied. Promise that not even death should be our end. And isn't that not what we were talking about before we said about the soul? So really, we've come through talking about we have a body and we can fix it and work with it. We can dance and explore all the mind. And now we know that our soul is eternal. Yes?
That particular line in the book is probably the most controversial one in the creation of the process. And so many readers that I worked with and editors who were helping me along the journey of this book said, take it out. And then the next person came in and said, where did it go? It has to be there.
Yes.
And my own feeling was that, no, it really had to be there. And I fought for it against the advice of people that I really respected in every other change that they suggested. Yes, I see where you're going with that. You're brilliant. You've made it so much better. But no, I have to keep that last sentence. I really do.
Right, because as you said, what you know, the secret. Everybody has this. The quests are always looking for. Take me to, get me back where the bifurcation of the road where I did wrong so I could still figure it out. Everybody's seeking. There's seekers now on the earth. And if they're truly seeking for the secret is the soul says, I'm eternal. That's the answer. And then you go, well, holy crap, now what? You know? But in essence, then all we've really done is we've just traded the words through the letters in the air and said, now what will the soul choose to teach us? I think we get so wrapped up in answers, solutions, fixes, cures, and all this other stuff. But truly what we're looking for is questions, more questions. I want another journey. Give me something else to do. Give me somewhere else to go. Give me somewhere else to explore. We aren't looking for the end result. We're truly looking for just the journey. Don't you think your book is all about the journey?
I would love to think so, and that it takes people on a journey itself. And I thought I would have a more memorable closing line than that. But
I think, Tim, really your book, I absolutely loved it. I mean, if you want to have an engaging conversation with an elder, hand them this book, sit down and read it with them. Even if you're only opening it up to any page, it doesn't have to be from beginning to end, although that is the way it's written. But when you open it up to any page, it draws you in, and you just get engaged in that moment in time. Don't you think that that's really, truly what we're looking for is reach in and take out my heart, open it up. I want to be somewhere else. I want to feel something else. I'm so tired of my day-to-day stuff. Take me on an adventure. And your novel, The Winter Sisters, is that adventure.
Well, it was certainly an adventure for me to write it and do the research, talk to people of all ages, practices, faiths, mindsets, dive deep into the history of the town where I live. I feel like in writing this book, although it's fiction, that I didn't make anything up. I took stories, traditions, practices, history, and I gave it a certain order to create this novel, but nothing is invented. Everything is real.
And it's absolutely wonderful. You know, you see a lot of coming out now of Appalachian herbalists and root workers. And I think the revolution, if you're traveling or if you see other books or if you share other stories or even on this show, check them out and say, you know what? Wow, I have no clue what that's about, but it's drawing me in into the adventures of life. And I think it's such a great story, Tim. You know, your novel was a great, it almost sucks you right in. And I just absolutely loved it. I mean, I just couldn't wait to get to your book. It was great.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that. That's an extremely kind compliment, and I appreciate it so much, Dr. Jeanette.
Oh, you're so welcome. Can you share with the listeners, Tim, about how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Absolutely. I have a website, timwestover.com, that has links to this novel as well as some of my earlier works. And then I'm Tim Westover on just about all of the social media platforms, if you prefer to connect that way.
Yes. Well, Tim, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I just love talking to authors that you have gone on a journey, and to be able to light up these little lights and say, you know, well, maybe it goes here, maybe it goes there. And I think we did that today too, right?
Absolutely. Likewise, it was a pleasure, Dr. Jeanette. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about Tim Westover, again, his novel is The Winter Sisters. I highly recommend it. Oh, man, I really love this book. I just felt like I was in every single page. If you've had some past life things dancing around in your head, you say, I'd love to engage in this. I'm going to start experimenting with that. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm on a journey in a quest to connect with nature. This book is a fantastic one. It truly is about being able to say, what are we truly trying to heal or cure? The human plight, the human soul, or the human heart? We're really just on an adventurous journey. Our soul is eternal. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.